Welcome back, everybody, here today to episode 2 of the podcast series that is covering the topic of how to get into rowing. My name's Trevor, and once again, I'm joined back in the driver's seat with my mate, Carl. Carl, how are you?
I'm going very well, mate. Yourself?
Not too bad at all. I guess, Carl, we've selected the second gear of this series. So just a quick note to our listeners. If they are listening to this podcast, they have probably missed out on episode 1, which had a lot of information on how to get started from the beginning and the real foundation type information. If they want to get that, Carl, where can they access that from?
Okay, easiest place is from our Rallycast page for our Rallycast podcast, which is on the PerthRallyDriving.com website.
Excellent, mate, excellent. All right, let's crack on. Now, hopefully I won't have to bring out the Rally Dictionary too much for some of the terminology that we'll use in this episode. But look, just rest assured, listeners, we have it sitting right here with us to explain some of the techie stuff, as I guess this is what this podcast series is about.
Yep.
Make a start. What are we going to cover in this episode today, Carl?
All right. First thing we're going to cover is progressing further into club motorsport, and we certainly gave that a good bash episode 1 there. So we'll talk about an optional step in there. And then from there, we'll move into the starting point of thinking about get yourself ready to go into full rallying.
All right. Well, let's take it away.
All right. Okay. Now, if we're going to progress further into club motorsport, and this is an optional step, by the way. This is something you don't have to. The next step in the club motorsport line is into autocross.
I didn't think we'd have to break out the rally dictionary so soon, mate. But for our listeners, what is an autocross?
Okay. Right. Easiest way to explain it is if our listeners ever watched Rally Australia, say when it was in Perth, watched it on TV or maybe went to see it live either at Langley Park or Gloucester Park, with a super special stage there where they had sort of two rally cars that ran side by side there around a set track. It had a jump and a tunnel and a few bits and pieces in it. And that's effectively a glorified autocross, okay, where you have a set track that you go around. It's faster than a kart across. Really, we can go as fast as you can drive around these sort of things. CAMS classify them slightly differently. They classify them as a speed event. And instead of, say, with a kart across where you might have, you know, 5, 10, 20 tests in a day, in an autocross, you get sort of maybe 3 or 4 runs, timed runs during the day of the same track. Okay?
Right. Yeah.
So that's how it works.
Righto. Well, I take it then from the information we had in our first episode, there's a license that's required for that?
You do. And because it's a speed event, CAMS classify it differently. So therefore, you need to have the next level of CAMS license. And in episode 1, we talked about the level 2 non-speed license. Okay. Well, for a autocross event, you need to have a CAMS level 2 speed license. Okay. And that's because the event's classified as a high speed. So for a speed license, what you need to do we'll talk about upgrading the license. So we'll assume then that the whatever license level you have is still current. Okay. Go onto the CAMS website, download the license upgrade form, fill in the details, and you pay your upgrade fee, which is the difference between the license you currently hold and the new license. So in this case, a level 2 speed license. Okay, so you do that, away you go. Now, the cost for a level 2 speed license, 2013 prices, is $100 a year for adults. And for juniors, it's still about $15. So that's about the same price as it is for the level 2 non-speed license. Okay, you just pay the upgrade fee and away you go.
Okay, that sounds pretty easy. If we talk about the sort of, I guess you say, safety equipment side of things, look, am I going to need my ninja suit, Carl? And I guess the other thing is am I going to need a car?
And look, the safety equipment, attire, what you need to wear, etc., and the car, the same requirements as kart across.
Righto, no problems. Okay, so the optional autocross step aside, where to from here then?
Righto. Next point is, now we're getting down to the nuts and bolts a little bit more here, to the tin tacks, is to the starting point to go into rallying. And at this stage, we're just sort of thinking about going into rallying. We're not actually just leaping straight in at this stage, right? And the first thing on the list that you need to think about is a navigator or co-driver.
Okay, more information?
Yeah, okay, righto. Now, you and I, Trev, obviously started rallying together. You navigated for me.
Yep.
So you understand very well. So we'll try and convey to our listeners how this works. Basically, if you get into, just go and buy a rally car, you know, and get yourself sorted out, you know, you're going to drive, and then put your hand up, you know, and in a forum or on Facebook or something and say, hey, I want a navigator. Chances are you're going to find it very difficult to get a navigator or a co-driver. The reason being is that there's a relationship between driver and navigator, and some people attest that to the same sort of relationship as husband and wife. Now, it depends what kind of relationship you have with your husband
or wife. I don't think we had that relationship,
Joel. No, mate, we certainly didn't. But certainly the level of trust, we do. And that's because the navigator has to trust the driver in terms of their driving style or whatever, and the driver has to trust that the navigator is going to give them the correct information.
Mm-hmm.
And so the speed involved in rallying is very fast, so that there's definitely a huge level of trust there. And then on top of that also, you form a relationship with somebody that you're sitting in the car with. If you do the steps that we've already said in, say, episode one, where you join the car club and you go and get involved in club motorsport, you get to meet people and talk to people, and people can give you advice, and people get to know you. So when you're looking for a navigator, it's a little bit easier. You may be able to find somebody through your car club who's keen to navigate for you once people get to know who you are. The other thing is that if you're not able to find a navigator, and at the moment in Western Australia at least, navigators are in a fair shortage, you know. So the other thing to think about is potentially somebody that you know or you trust already, or have a good relationship with already, whether that be husband, wife, children, you know, brother, father, son, sister, etc., or a good friend. Obviously, Trev and I, that's how we started. You know, somebody that you can trust and know, who there's no problem if they're starting out as well, but somebody who's willing to commit to rallying or to commit to the sport as much as you are. Navigating is not turn up today, maybe not turn up to the next one, maybe come in 3 weeks' time. No, it doesn't work like that. You need to be committed to rallying and realise that it is a team sport now, and it's one of the only forms of motorsport where there's more than one person in the car. You know, it's not like circuit racing where you go and do your own thing. You're in the car together, and whether you win, lose, or draw, that's a team effort.
Yeah,
right?
I get it. Yeah.
All right. So the next thing to think about, co-drivers are important, is to think about where you'd like to go in the sport. Do you have, you know, Australian Rally Championship or World Championship aspirations, or just club level, or, you know, state level rally?
Why is this? What are we talking about, the end goal, or just something else to do? Or
yeah, definitely, mate. Actually, that's a good point there. The end goal in mind. Basically, the reason that you want to think about where you want to go in the sport is this will determine the type of car, right, to start off with, whether you start with a front wheel drive or a rear wheel drive car. Okay, and I'm going to make this very clear at this point again. Do not buy a car at this stage. Don't buy a car yet. Rally car, okay? Yeah, classic mistake, okay? Another one of the classic mistakes, okay? Not time to buy a car yet, but you certainly have to be thinking about where you want to go, because if you want to become the next World Rally Championship, and there's no age limit on this, you know, there's none whatsoever. You can start rallying at 70, and if you have the determination and everything that's required, you could become a World Rally driver or World Rally Championship.
Right.
So don't buy a car yet. Okay, the next thing I'm going to talk about is budget.
Ah, the money.
Yes, indeed. How much money can you squeeze out of the War Office?
Mm-hmm.
First thing you have to think about is the cost to buy or build a rally car, okay, which will take up a fair chunk of the budget, depending on which way you go. And just a side note before I move on here, we're now talking about plural for everything. In the past, for, you know, most other forms of motorsport, there's only one person in the car, so there's only one lot of safety gear or apparel or whatever. Now you've got a driver and a navigator, so both require this safety gear, particularly if you're starting out. So from an apparel point of view, you have to upgrade everything. Your ninja suit, longs are no longer suitable to do a rally. You need to have, both you and your navigator need to have fireproof race suit.
Yep.
You also need to have fireproof boots, fireproof gloves for the driver, and you also need to have fireproof balaclavas. Not the kind that people tend to rob banks with.
No, we don't want them.
No, we definitely don't want those. No, but there's a proper balaclava, and that needs to be worn as well. Okay, so there's a cost involved in that, and also there's safety gear that's got to go into the car or general rallying safety equipment as well. And again, that's double. Like if you're building a car, you've now got to have two race seats in there, two sets of safety harnesses. Or 5-6 point seat belts, and there's obviously costs involved in that. So that's all got to go into your budget. There's also the cost to enter the actual rallies themselves. Now, so far we've talked about very cheap forms of motorsport. So, you know, $35-$40 to enter a Carnacross, and maybe $50-$80 to enter an autocross, something like that. Now we're talking in Western Australia at least. I won't speak for the rest of the world or other states, but rallies are generally several hundred dollars to enter each event. So you've got to factor that in. You've got to factor the fuel in. You're going to use a lot more fuel to do a competitive rally than you would to do a Carnacross, because the distances are further and rally cars tend to chew more fuel. Yep. You've got to factor in tyres into that, however you sort your tyres out. We'll cover this further down the track. In Western Australia, generally, most of the rallies you need some form of accommodation. So you've got to factor that in as well. And food. Into that
food
as well.
For the troops, eh?
Yeah, food for the troops and yourself, you know, depending however you sort that out. So you've got all these costs involved, and in that's just the competition side, you know, to get you to a rally. You've also got to factor into your budget maintaining your rally car. Competition cars and rally cars are not like a normal road car. You're not able to just take it to an event, wash it when you're finished, and, you know, that's the end of that. To make the cars reliable and to be safe and to get to an event, there is maintenance that needs to be done on any competition car. And that's going to come down to your level of mechanical expertise.
Yep.
You know, whether you can do the work yourself, or whether you have to pay somebody to work on the car, you know, or whether you know somebody who can help you out with it.
Yeah.
All of those factors have to go into it. And that's one of the, you know, I talked earlier about the classic mistake of going out and buying a car. People go and buy the car. They've got the money for the car, buy the car, and then don't factor in all this other stuff and find this out, you know, later and then wonder what they're going to do. I have a very specific question here that anybody that wants to get into rallying needs to ask themselves.
Okay.
What can you afford to lose? How much money can you afford to lose?
Right.
Okay. How much money can you take and throw it in the bin? Okay. And if the answer is zero, I cannot afford to lose any money, then do not go rallying.
Right.
That's my honest advice. And that might be tough love to be told straight up. However, if you don't have the money, don't go rallying. Because if you cannot afford to, you know, rebuild the car from the ground up, if the car's written off for some reason or has some serious mechanical failure that puts you out of an event or out of action, if you don't have the money to sort that out, or you cannot afford to lose that money, you know, and some people make a really bad mistake of borrowing money, even worse still, you shouldn't be going rallying. That's my simple advice.
Very wise advice.
It is. It's a classic mistake too.
Licenses then. This must be a little bit different from the autocross / carnacross.
Yep.
You want to give us a bit of a rundown about that?
Yep. Okay. Again, the rally license system, you need to upgrade licenses again. So similar principle, you download the forms for rally license. Now I'm going to start with the basic rally license. The most basic rally license in Australia is called the Clubman Rally License. Don't be fooled by the name. Clubman Rally License allows you to compete up to state championship level, even though it's called a Clubman. Okay?
Right.
Now, to get your rally license, both driver and co-driver or navigator need to complete a lecture. Okay? Now, CAMS have two ways of doing these lectures. It's compulsory. There's no way of getting around it. You can either do it online. Okay? There's an online course that you sit. You organize with CAMS. They give you a login code. You log in and you do the license online on your own computer, or you can do it face-to-face, the CAMS office or whatever. When you're applying for your license, CAMS will advise you of how to do it. There's a little bit of a process involved in doing it. But both driver and co-driver have to have done the rally lecture and understand that and pass that.
Yeah.
Now, the next step I'm going to talk about here is for rally drivers, okay, who haven't had their driver's license for 5 years or more. Okay, so if you've had your driver's license for less than 5 years, this is your road driver's license, civil driver's license, you also need to complete another step called an observed license test. Basically, what that means is that two CAM sanctioned events, that is two Carnacrosses, a motor car and a Carnacross, etc., you need to be observed in competition to see how you drive, how you conduct yourself, and whether you are deemed suitable to be able to drive in a rally.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Now, that's only for people who haven't had their road driver's license for 5 years. And CAMS has put this in because you need to be experienced at handling a car and yourself at events. Mm-hmm. And if you have been doing as we've sort of suggested, follow the path and started in club level motorsport, this will be an easy step for you because you would have already competed at club level motorsport where you can be signed off for this kind of thing. And if you talk to people and say, I want to go rallying, the organisers will, in most cases, be able to help you out to observe you to do that. Mm-hmm. Okay. And or blowing our own trumpet, if you come through a rally action, rally driving experience and let us know, we are also qualified to sign off for observed license tests for CAMS rally licenses. Okay.
Oh, very good.
Okay. The next step is to go and help officiate on a rally.
Why do you say that?
Good question, Trev. I'm glad you asked.
I'm paying attention.
Excellent. Good. Good. It is late at night. It is. Anyway, I'm just making sure. Okay. Basically, officiating on a rally, and by the way, you don't need to have a rally license or even a CAMS license at all, in fact, to go and officiate on a rally, you know, so your friends, family, etc. can come as well. I'll help out. Officiating on a rally gives you the opportunity to see what's involved with a rally and really understand the complexity of how a rally works, right? Because running a full rally is a very complicated event to run. A guy called Steve Vanderbilt, who's a very wise guy, very knowledgeable man in Western Australia, explained it to me some years ago. He said, think of it this way. In a football game, or Aussie rules, you've, say, got 18 players on the field at any one time, probably 9 on each side, and, say, 4 to 6 umpires to run a whole game of football, okay? In a rally, there might be, say, 40 cars, so 80 competitors in there, you know, driver and navigator in each car. However, there may be 200, 300 or even 500 officials required to run a rally.
Yep.
So the scale of competitors versus officials is massive in comparison to, say, football. So, mm-hmm. and like in events like Rally Australia, international events, they can have 2,500 officials, you know, to run a rally. It's really huge numbers of people required. So, if nothing else, helping out on a rally, you know, is a way of competitors putting back into their sport. And rally organisers are always in need of officials. And many rally competitors don't understand what's involved to run an event. They just turn up and, you know, do their competition and leave. So doing that gives you an understanding of how the event works, which, you know, we believe helps to make you a better competitor. When you understand the flip side of the coin and what's involved in organising, it makes it easier to compete.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, the next thing, you know, on your journey, I suppose, is to get involved with an existing rally team and go along and help, say, service as part of a service crew.
Yeah, I can see the logic in that, Carl, especially from my experience. I mean, that's certainly one point, I think, where that really gives you the appreciation of how a rally works and especially from the team point of view, yeah.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, mate. And, you know, obviously we've been competing, so that – We'll cover more about how a rally works in our next episode of Rallycast on this series, okay? But it gives you an understanding of how, you know, a service crew works. And if you've been doing the club level motorsport and you ask around, say, hey, does anybody need a hand on, you know, on a rally? It's very much the same as organisers, you know, looking for officials. Most people are, you know, happy to have another pair of hands for a rally crew.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So, the final thing that we're going to cover on today's podcast, in this episode, is to start thinking about, just thinking about at this stage, the type of rally car you want.
Ooh, does this mean I get to drive a WRX or a Lancer or something?
No. Classic mistake, right? I'm not keeping count of these classic mistakes, but it's another big one, okay?
Right.
I won't say many people, but certainly a few people go straight out and buy a four-wheel drive turbo rally car, okay?
Why do I do that?
Well, if you've ever been to one of our rally driving experiences, you've heard me say, I believe four-wheel drive is safer on the road. However, in the dirt, I disagree with that, okay? The reverse is true. A lot of people say, oh, four-wheel drive safer, I can go four-wheel drive. Four-wheel drive is definitely faster.
Yeah.
Safer, not so much. I mean, starting out, with a two-wheel drive car, you either go to a front-wheel drive or a rear-wheel drive car, right?
Yep.
And the reason for that is because in a four-wheel drive car, you've got two extra wheels driving into trouble twice as quickly. You know, things happen in a split second, and this is a real pitfall of four-wheel drive. And also, four-wheel drive cars, the maintenance and the fuel and the tyres and everything else is also larger and more expensive. So the best way to do it is you start with a front-wheel drive or a rear-wheel drive car, and then you go into Clubman Rallying. Now, in WA, it's called the Clubman Rally Series or the Clubman Cup. Right.
Okay, hang on. Do I need to get the dictionary out here?
Yeah, we'll touch on this real briefly here, and we'll cover it more in detail in the next episode, okay? But the Clubman Cup is specifically designed as an entry level into rallying, okay? The distance is half the distance of state events. The entry fee is cheaper. The events run on a simpler system, okay? And so our advice is that you run a two-wheel drive car. Oh, and incidentally, the Clubman Cup is only open to two-wheel drive cars. So you're only competing against other two-wheel drive cars, right? Yep. So it's a good place to cut your teeth, to get into rallying to begin with, you know, and to run on a relatively cheaper budget in, say, comparison to state rallying and above. And once you are into the Clubman Cup, then the doors are open to go further.
All right. Excellent. Well, mate, I think we're just about out of time. I think that's a wrap.
Yep, I reckon you're right there, mate.
All right, well, once again, thank you for your time, Carl, and also, of course, to our listeners that have jumped on board again. Next podcast, what have we got? How Rally Works, is that right?
Yes, it is, mate. We're really going to need the dictionary on the next one, mate.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, we're going to go right through. We're going to dissect how Rally Works. We're going to get into the nitty-gritty of it all. And the reason for that is to make it easier for our future podcasts after that, for our listeners to understand what we're talking about. So maybe we need to release our rally dictionary online, Trev.
Well, it's I think with what we're going to cover, it's going to be quite large. So
yeah, you're not wrong there, mate.
Definitely. Righto, Carl. Thank you again, and thank you to our listeners for your time. And we will speak to you all soon. Bye for now.
Thanks, mate. Please note that the opinions, ideas and views expressed by the hosts are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinions, ideas or views of the competitors, organisers or the governing body of the motorsport.